Welcome to the Bangers List podcast. We are back after a mysterious absence, almost as mysterious as the band we're going to talk about today. And we're consistently inconsistent by delivering these episodes, aren't we, guys?
Oh, we're fucked, mate. We're all over the place.
Welcome back after a long kind of holiday, I guess it was. What have we done in the interim between episodes?
Not heaps.
Cool.
Well, look, I think someone's been a little busy.
Yep, doing some groundwork.
Yeah, doing some research for us.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us about your adventures, Julian?
It was a little while back now, so I can't really sit here and say that it's like, you know, I'm at the bleeding edge or the coal face. But a couple of months ago, a month or two back, I saw Polaris on their Fatalism headline tour with August Burns Red, Kublai Khan TX and Currents.
2 months ago. Fuck, we've been on the podcast.
Yeah, it was a while back.
Jesus.
It felt like ages ago.
Yeah, it was early September, wasn't it?
September?
Yeah, because the album came out the September 1st, and it was like 2 weeks after that, pretty much. It was like a month and a half ago, I guess. How was that, you are going to ask me? That was probably one of the best fucking shows I've ever been to. Now, you remember I talked about Knotfest?
Yeah.
And that just how, like, that was slicker than goose shit, right? As a one-off show, this was basically the same. And it was three bands that I liked and a band that I'd never seen before in Kublai Khan TX. I'm assuming I'm pronouncing that right. So Currents were up first, was up first. They were solid. They were, you know, like when like one of the warm-up bands, they never mix them the same as they mix the headliner.
Yeah.
I think they were just lacking a little bit of energy, but I got to see them play The Death We Seek, which... fucking slaps.
Yeah, been into them lately. Not bad
band. Yeah, they go hard. They're really, really good spirit, like this and that. Then Kublai Khan TX comes out, and I'm pretty sure they changed it to... They put the TX on at some point recently because, like, their old singer or something wanted to, like, keep the trademark or something. So they were Kublai Khan, and then they changed it to Kublai Khan TX, I think, because they're from Texas, I guess. I'd never heard of or seen them before, and based on what the lead singer looked like and how he acted, it was thick, like if it was like a young Stone Cold Steve Austin fronted Knock Loose.
Mad.
Yeah, he just had this fucking like redneck kind of Texas accent.
That's mad.
And it was real like hectic beatdown style. Yeah, it was like that was good fun to watch, and like everyone was getting into it, and he's just like mad tough. Think about like when Joel said, "'Cause it's tough," in the Five Finger Death Punch episode. That was what they were like.
All right.
Yeah. So
cool.
Obviously then we come to the, I would call them not the co-headliner, but August Burns Red.
You'd say if it were played anywhere else, like in any other country, it would be a co-headlining
If it wasn't
event,
an album release tour?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. What I need to say about them, they've been doing it for 20 years. They were so tight. Adam Gray from Texas in July was drumming for them.
Yeah, there's no Matt Griner, hey.
No, because Matt Griner couldn't go. He decided to stay home for the birth of his first child.
Yeah.
Which was very wholesome. But
his first child, really.
Matt Griner. Oh, first, maybe second, I'm not sure. He was having a child.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm going to stay home. And who better to replace him than Adam Gray? Just so fucking solid.
Yeah, he's filled in before.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he's Matt Griner's drum tech, and he's also, from Texas in July and Error, but him and Matt Griner are basically the same person. Like, you can watch videos online of Adam Gray filling in for Matt Griner, like playing Whitewashed and other songs and stuff, and it's literally like watching a clone. He's got his own style, but he still has that rigid posture.
I was going to say.
And just the way his hands move and stuff, you're like, that's a proper player.
All right.
Yeah, that was solid. They played a really good bag of songs and new stuff. They played Composure. Obviously, they played Whitewash because that song slaps. I got the crispest of high fives from JB Brubaker.
Yeah.
I was walking to the bathroom before their set, and him and Brent Rambler were coming down the stairs from upstairs where the musicians were. It's like a mezzanine floor they had blocked off. And I went, hey! And he went up top, my dude, and just fucking bang. It was like a gunshot went off. I got like tinnitus in my ear and shit. It was mad. I was just like, that was the coolest thing that's ever happened to me. I'm not going to wash my hand forever. Yeah.
It wasn't the slap of his thong underneath?
Oh, well, the man does wear thongs. Yeah, he was wearing thongs, true to form.
Flip-flops for you American and British viewers.
Yeah, so that was super tight, fantastic. And then obviously Polaris, they came on, they opened with Harbinger, and they went straight into Nightmare, which is how it is on the album. But unfortunately, someone in the pit got themselves in a little bit of trouble midway through Nightmare. So Jamie Hales stopped the song and said, like, we need to get this person out, like pointed the EMTs in there and stuff like that. So very wholesome content. You know, you could sort of tell that it wasn't the first show on the tour, but the dudes from Polaris, they were powering on, but to say they were rattled isn't correct, but you could tell that they were like, fuck, okay, this is pretty intense doing this without Ryan Sue. You know what I mean? Like, they had his guitar on stage as well on a stand.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, just to the left of, to the right of Dan's drums. And, like, they'd sort of, like, Jamie would intermittently sort of just put his hand on it and they'd all sort of, like, acknowledge it periodically. And you could, there was a lot of sort of, like, interaction between them during songs. Mm. Sorry, between them in between songs as well. They were sort of, like, you know, pumping each other up and, like, supporting each other and stuff. So
that was, fuck, that would have been hard. Like, that's getting me going.
Yeah,
now, dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, dude, like, fucking the Jamie, I think he sort of did it every show, but before they played Martyr, he did like a little bit of a, like a, it's fucking making me a bit choked up now. He did like a little, just bit of a statement saying like, you know, this is fucking hard without Ryan and stuff, but, you know, thank you everyone so much. Like, you know, and then sort of, you know, encouraging everyone to like support people in the community, support each other, support your friends, that sort of thing. So like, yeah. All, and then they just fucking hammered it home with like a really powerful set list. They ended up playing like 7 tracks off the new record.
Okay.
Did
they play Dissipate?
Fucking oath they did.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think they did a podcast with some dudes from Sydney, and I think it was Jamie said that he was the one he was the most keen to play was Dissipate.
Yeah.
And, like, it's weird. Polaris is such a consistent band, and they're like, compared to ABR, they're quite young. Both bands are insanely tight, but in different ways, if that makes sense. ABR are just like that super highly polished, like never make a mistake. But then Polaris are the same, but it's really hard to describe, but you sort of get what I'm getting at. They just didn't make a mistake. They didn't miss a beat the whole night.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, these new songs just fucking went off like a fish milkshake, hey.
Yeah, well, so, and each album seems to be, it is very consistent, yeah, but they don't let you down at all, but it's still refreshing at the same time. Like, it's not the Mortal Coil on repeat. It's
No.
They are evolving, and it's different.
Same as ABR.
Yeah.
Like, you know you're listening to a Polaris record. I'm really fucking salty. Some dude on Reddit said that Fatalism, I was just looking at the metalcore threat, and that was my problem at first. I shouldn't have been in r/metalcore, because it should just be r/knuckle draggers. Some dude was like, Fatalism is B-sides from The Death of Me at best. And I was like, that, you know, that gorilla that really rustled my jimmies?
Yeah.
That was me. I was like, I'm going to downvote you. Fuck you. So, yeah, a bit of an extensive explanation there. But that was fucking unreal, man. That was such a good show. Yeah.
So cool. I regret not going. And it was a money thing for me. Like, there's not often that we get a great show like that. Come to like in Canberra, and the reason I didn't go is because I've seen Polaris 3 times already, and you know, saving for a house, all those adult things you got to consider, and I look at it for value for money, like sensational, and it doesn't get any better than that. And obviously, you don't have to really travel anywhere, but yeah, it was just at the time, it was like, well, do I? Don't I? Decided against it, but that night I was driving home from work and I was listening to Polaris, I was listening to Fatalism, and I had, I had regrets. I was driving. And I was getting all teary driving home. I was like, oh, listening to Dissipate. I'm like, oh.
Well, how much was it, mate? Because it's only about 5 skewies worth of, for a ticket.
Well, yeah, and that's the problem. I would have had 5 skewies prices while I was there too. So
venue prices. I was paying like $14 for a seltzer.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm watching my weight. I'm drinking responsibly. Well, I wasn't. they sting you. I actually got this jumper. This is my August Burns red jumper.
Oh, yeah, for all the video watchers.
All the people that are watching.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Established 2003.
2003, that's right.
Love that. Cool.
Yeah, I just got up and walked away from the mic. So.
Whoops, yeah, put that up, man. Yeah, great. That's how much did that set you back? How many skewies?
$80.
Oh, not 40
for a shirt.
Yeah, cool.
Pretty good prices. I'm waiting for the day that bands start charging like $60 for a shirt.
Ooh.
And that's when I'm going to be like, that's a bit on the nose.
Well, some bands do, like your arena bands do.
Yeah, like when I went to see Harry Styles, I bought like a Kmart, not me, my partner bought like a Kmart shirt with like a print for like
I thought you about to say he bought
$80
a cape.
I think. It was like 60, 70, 80
just
bucks.
Like a cheap brand shirt.
And it was the shittest thing. It like feels like it's falling apart, like it's made of sand or something. I was like, Jesus.
keep it rolling because we do have content.
I was getting a bit carried away.
With the community?
Yeah, nothing exciting, mate. But that story was fucking longer than Daniel's NFT guitar story. So well done there.
Yeah, cool.
any music news? I haven't been keeping up with it because we've been off the job for a couple of weeks. Anything good in music news or should we just rip right into the meat of the podcast?
I reckon we just rip in.
Fantastic. So we're going to be doing Sleep Token and their song, The Summoning, will be kind of the focus song. We'll just jump into a sample right now. Yeah, all right. So that's kind of just like the start of the song, basically the first verse there. You can hear his voice. It's very powerful, deep, rich tones. And before you guys start to break the rest of it down, for some reason, and it does this in a lot of his songs, he kind of like almost grunts into it. The first line, the first one, he does like breaths and sighs. You really hear him. Rather than cutting all that out, you can hear him like, and it's very, it's just interesting. That's one of the little things that I've tried
There's a bit of that on the record and in like for them in general. Well, we can get into that. He is, I mean, fuck, where do you even start with these guys? I think we're very late to the party on this one.
Well, but like, you could say that, but I've seen them around since like 2020, I think it was, maybe 2021. I knew of them and because they kind of jumped up and they were in a lot of my playlists. If I was shuffling, they'd pop up a lot there. And I'd skip them a lot as well because I was like, this sounds like pop music.
All right, so I guess we'll go from the ground up. So they're a British, let's call them a rock band. They can't really be categorized. Mm-hmm. I was going to say categorizable, but I don't think that's a word. They've been around since 2000 and mid-2010s, I think. They've got three releases. They've got Sundowning.
Yep,
2019. This Place Will Be Your Tomb or Become Your Tomb. I can never remember that one. And 2023 is Take Me Back to Eden, which this is the second track. They are an anonymous band, which is pretty fucking impressive these days. It was originally just the lead singer who is known as Vessel. A little bit of backstory for them. They've got like sort of their own lore within the band. How do I describe it? So the whole thing is sort of revolves around this deity that came to Vessel in his sleep, and the deity is called Sleep.
We can't pronounce it in any of our languages.
Something its like name, that. So that's sort of like they exist to sort of be the mouthpiece and worship this deity.
We could almost think like to Ghost as kind of a parallel and of having like the...
Yeah, like it fully has its own lore.
And the lore, perfect.
Which I think is cool. I thought it was a bit weird at first, but they've somehow, as far as I know, managed to remain anonymous. There's a lot of people that seem to think they know who the singer is or he was in a previous band.
He was in a band.
Also, hang on just before you go ahead. I'm making it my business never to know anything about them. So if you do know their names or anything...
Oh, I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Do you want to, just for like... You know, to keep it a mystery, we won't say their names or his name or who he is, but he was, if I say a band he was in.
I know he was in a previous band.
So we won't even say that band's name. You can go and Dior that yourself, which stands for do your own research. but the band he was in, let's say I listened to a bit of it, it sounded like MGMT, just to contextualize how it sounded from a pop context, but he wasn't like electric music. It was just like almost minimalist acoustics, but his vocals were a lot like the MGMT singer, really high and a bit, I'd say it was, there was a lot of effects on his voice and stuff as there is now. And so that's where he came from. So he has been around. I'm pretty sure that lead singer has done stuff, but we'll keep him, you know, as anonymous as possible just to help with the story and the lore. It's cool.
It's something that I never got to do with Slipknot. Like obviously they are a different box of frogs, but like, you know, in some bands they just blow up. And then people would make it. It was like, I think it was weird. People made it their business to find out who these people were. But I think within the fan community of Sleep Token, it's sort of like an unspoken rule that if you know who they are, you don't ruin it for other people.
Yeah, that's
because they do have that lore and that whole.
And we'll do that. We'll continue that. We're part of the community now, aren't we? Yeah. Big fella. What do you reckon?
What do I reckon? About what?
Fucking song.
About the song. Okay. Band. Well,
the lore, the history. You're a big lore and history man.
Yeah, I am. Haven't gone too far into their lore, but I did find that interesting, and I agree that it's pretty impressive that they've remained anonymous to this day in the age of social media, where it's
they take it quite far. They don't speak on stage. Mm.
They don't drink water either.
Apparently, they don't drink water. But could you do a full set without drinking water if you were singing? Daniel, you especially, mate. Could you do a full set without drinking water or beer?
Yeah, I could. I was going to have a beer. Does that count as water?
back in your time, mate, I remember you did some screams and you'd play the drums. You'd be pissing sweat.
Yeah.
Did you drink water? Really? Could you do a full set?
I almost never had.
Oh, so you play for Sleep Token. There you go.
Yeah. But they've done one interview and it was a text-based interview as well.
True.
And they have like no... Their social media presence, they all we'll get into it in a minute, but all four of them have a social media because there's Vessel, who's like, he basically writes everything. And then I think on the second record, number two, so it's just like I.
Like Roman numerals. Twice.
Yeah, Roman numerals, yeah.
Two, three, four.
Two, he's the only other credited musician, but they now have three and four. I think three's the bass player and four's the guitarist. They all... Vessel wears sort of like a more, slightly more theatrical stage garb. He's got the iconic white mask in various forms. And the other guys have these like cloth, sort of thin cloth masks. And they have like the hooded things and stuff like that with the body paint. So, but it's like his show and he's just got these other guys. So their social media presence is like, they all say the same thing. It's just, they'll have photos and it'll say like, sacred worship captured by... Because, you know, the whole thing is that, like, they're worshipping the deity. So, and then they'll tag the photographer that took the photos for them. That's so funny. They've got this very uniform style sort of... And I guess that helps with the anonymity.
See, know? I just thought they're anonymous because, like, 4chan was taking over the zeitgeist. Sorry. Because everyone's anonymous. Sorry. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure, and you're probably about to say this, that it's actually because bands are always identified by the people within the bands and then they're marketed... Bands are marketed through who is in the band. And rather than focusing on the music, we're focusing on who is in the band.
That's right.
And so then they're just like, you have no choice now but to focus on the music because we are just a
correct. Picture. Yeah. For the yeah. And that's why I think it's the moniker Vessel. Fuck, you're right. It is really hot in here.
It's fucking hot.
Daniel's back office and he warned me when I came in my ABR, flashing my bling around, just dunking on him for not coming to the show. It's like, mate, we've got a window. Anyway. Yeah, I read somewhere as sort of like a thought on it from someone, which was, like, if you listen to a lot of his lyrics, they are sort of, they come from like a very vulnerable person or a very like emotional kind of, like highly emotional sort of person. Not like histrionics, yeah. But it's like they come from a very vulnerable sort of place. And I think having that anonymity means that someone can write those lyrics that are very fucking deep.
True. Because if I was ever going to write like a book about, I don't know, my life, or maybe say you write like just a novel, I'd want to be anonymous. I don't know why. Yeah. I've only got like six friends. What are they going to do? Tease me? Weird.
Yes, weird. Definitely.
Well, I've got some ideas about what the song is about. And all right. You've kind of said who you think, like a perspective he writes from. What do you think the song's about, mate?
Initially, I thought it was a song about lust.
Yeah,
That was kind of my take on it. And someone who's, you know, is experiencing lust and just can't escape it, basically.
Which makes sense.
Yes.
But keep going.
The opening line... The river.
I've got a river running right into you.
Yeah, I've got a river running right into you. So he's literally, you know, they are heading down a path and they cannot escape it. Basically, is my take from that particular line. The funky verse outro at the end where it basically becomes a new song. That's where I think I see some innuendo creeping in a little bit more as well. So, a little different to what we've done on the bangers list before.
Yeah, definitely different.
See, that's my take on it, though.
I like that, man. I can kind of expand upon that. You said there was like the lust, and I kind of thought it was about his relationship with sleep. Could be wrong.
And that's probably right, given the lore behind the band.
But it is like a very romanticized kind of look at things almost. And as you said, there's lust there. But it's like their destiny is to be together.
Well, you look at the chorus as well. He said, raise me up again, take me past the edge. I want to see the other side.
Yeah, like he wants to leave this world, this vessel, to go and be with them.
Or to elevate to another sort of...
Yeah. But then... So I listened to some of the other songs on the album and it kind of seems like he's breaking from that relationship of lust and
It reads like somebody who has been through traumatic experiences or traumatic relationships, but also has... like a relationship that they can't get away from. It's like toxic, like someone in their life that is basically their sort of kryptonite. Do you know what I mean? Like no matter what they do, they can't say no to this person or they can't get away from them.
This deity.
Yeah, exactly right. It's just this fucking never ending sort of effervescent, perpetual, you know, element of their life, I suppose.
Yeah, and because of his vocal style, really haunting and rich tone, like I said before, kind of matches the whole feel really well. Like the power he gets through his voice, not the power, but also like he's very emotive with his lyrics and what he says.
Well, he's got a couple of kinds of vocal styles as well. He's got like obviously the Uncleans,
which are rare, few and far between, unfortunately.
He uses them on The Summoning, Vor, Take Me Back to Eden, the title track, which I do want to talk about. But then he's got his singing that he uses here, but then he's got this, it's weird, he uses it in a couple of songs. It's like he's talking almost, but he's talking in a melodic kind of way. It's hard to describe, but it's sort of like he's got his bottom jaw pushed back a bit and he's like sort of forcing the words out.
True, okay. Yeah. I think that some of the songs even have rap almost in it. Is that what you mean?
Kind of. Oh, so, no, sort of. Yeah, if I pointed it out to you, it's like at the start of Granite, he uses this particular style of vocals. And then, yeah, there's one or two songs where he's singing so quickly, it almost sounds like he's rapping.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot. I think we should probably say, like, this band, there's a lot of different almost genres, and some of the songs do slide between genres, and it's pretty smooth because I feel like it's pretty hard to swap genres in the middle of a song or halfway throughout a song and still be good, and they do that pretty well. And
I think looking at these guys, this sort of band wouldn't have been as successful, I don't think, 15 years ago.
Why are they successful now? What happened? What happened overnight? Why?
I think we've just evolved to the point where, like, blending styles is so much more common these days that blending the styles like these guys do, which I think is sort of taking it to another level, is sort of not jarring or not as jarring as, you know, like when, like A Day to Remember, they would have released For Those Who Have Heart, and it was like fucking Blink-182 choruses with Parkway Drive verses or vice versa. Do you know what I mean? And people were like, what the fuck? Like, easy core, like pop punk core, whatever you want to call it. Like, that was just fucking like blew the doors off people's brains.
Yeah. Well, sure, it would have happened earlier than that, but that was a mainstream.
In our lifetime, we were around to see them cop hate for mixing two genres that were not in the same quadrant of music, but in the same sphere. Oh, I don't know.
Ballpark?
Yeah, ballpark. You know, they were still both band driven or guitar driven and stuff like that. But these days now, you're like, you know, and then like before that, you know, rap rock, Limp Bizkit, how much shit did they get? Like, they got shit from the metal community and they got shit from the rap community. You know what I mean? Because they were mixing two things that people, fans of either side didn't like the other one. And they especially didn't like when their side was associated with the other side that they didn't like. You know what I mean?
So, all that suffering back then has led to it being normalized now, and the sound is more acceptable. Is that why it's so?
That's could what be. I think.
Yeah, I think just, it's a number of factors at play. I think one thing that works in their favor is that they have that blend. They have that blend of genres, but they're different. They're different. They stand out compared to anything else that's out there at the moment. And I think that's probably the major reason behind the success. The anonymity. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Anonymity. Oh, fuck, I nailed it. I've never said a word that big in my life.
You're a pro podcaster now. Look at you go. Those verbal gymnastics.
I think that works in their favour as well, creates that mystique. And that's a draw card for sure.
Yeah, it's a draw card because people really want to engage with their bands.
Yeah, but people go, "What the fuck's going on here?" And they go, "They want to scratch."
I want to slide into
the DMs. I sort of touched on it before. Sorry, just to put in there. I actually really enjoy that I don't have a parasocial relationship with these people. Mm. Like, as a fan, do you know what I mean? I really like these guys, but it's really nice as a fan just to like the music and just they've presented this, and this is as far as we go with engaging with them. There are people that are fucking obsessed with these guys, and I'll touch on that later. But like, it's a refreshing change of pace.
Yeah,
you know, not that I don't really follow people on social media. I follow all the guys from Polaris, and it's really fucking cool that how much they let people into their lives and watching them as musicians and seeing all the skits and cool shit they're doing.
Yeah.
They just did a show yesterday wearing onesies for Halloween. It was hilarious. But also, like I said, on the flip side, it's nice to just have this, you know, you know exactly what it is, and there's no depth further to it.
Well, that was their goal. But you can also do that yourself. Like, you can have a band that you like and just don't engage with them on a social media level as well. But
yeah. But you can still know names, faces.
Yeah, good point. That's fair enough. And they'll come up in some kind of news or blah, blah, blah.
Like, there's no band that you listen to where you don't at least know, like, you know, the singer has a big personality or the guitarist is this and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, even if you didn't,
Yeah, bro.
I was going to say something about Avenged Sevenfold. I thought Daniel might throw something
at me. He's got nothing within arm's reach, so he would have been safe.
No, you're safe, mate. You're safe.
Yeah.
But I think you're bang on there. And to elaborate on that, I think what that allows them to do is, it allows them to create music that is just art. There's no genre. There's no expectation behind what they're trying to do. It's they've created their own piece of art, and the piece of art you know, goes as far as the law, even.
Correct.
And
yeah.
The image that they have and the music that they have to, and the themes that they convey through their music. Mm. Like it's all part of it. It's all part of it. And I think it's similar to Ghost in that sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ghost obviously a very different vibe, but yeah, I think that is but you can see I can see a lot of parallels between Sleep Token and Ghost. And I can see them heading down a similar pathway.
Travis fucking
Tobias McCoy, Forge.
That's the one.
Yes.
Travis McCoy.
Yeah.
I don't know where he's from. Who's he?
Oh, fuck no.
Is he anyone?
No, he's from fucking Gym Class Heroes. Oh, okay. Actually, no, you know what? Like, I actually have respect for them because on a number of occasions, they've done a cover of Laid to Rest by Lamb of God live. And for a band that's like a pop sort of band, they actually pulled it off, eh? Like it was like, you know, it's like playing it on a kid's guitar. So it doesn't sound that good, but they give it a try. Anyway, what is
Tobias
name?
Tobias Forge.
Yeah, you know who he is.
You don't know the rest of the band.
Yeah, you know the rest of the band, but he's gone a long way to create this lore and this sort of the perpetual reincarnation of Papa Shelving Your Fist or whatever his name is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and by the time that people had discovered his identity, well, the fan base was just that developed.
Sure.
It was set. You know?
I think I see that with the Sleep Token fan base as well, except for the fact that no one has, well, people have figured it out, but people are so invested in it, they're happy to keep rolling the machine along.
Which is cool. Like, give us that suspension of disbelief for a minute. Like, let's just go and this is how it is. We don't know him. He's no one. He is just a vessel. Like, that's sick. I love that about him.
Yeah.
You know, the start of this song, bro, it just comes in straight away. It's like, boom, heavy guitars. Not all their songs are like that. But I really love how it starts really, really, really heavy. Does it sound like it's in like drop A or something, dude?
I was going to say at least drop
low.
B. I haven't looked at the tab, but it's definitely lower than drop D.
Is it a 7 string?
Probably is. Possibly an 8. Like it's...
Yeah. Fuck.
I love that sound.
Yeah, just that chug. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, it's and like, it's not doing much, is it? But dun, dun, this is one note over and over again. Little sort of variations and flurries every so often. But and it's just straightforward. But it doesn't... You don't really want anything else from it. You know, sometimes when you're listening to a song, particularly in the... You know, the metal scene. Yeah. You kind of want it to go somewhere. The
metal scene.
Yes. I was gonna say in, you know, a metal song, but whatever genre it might be, but particularly in metal, you kind of want some. You crave some intensity or some energy, but in this case, it doesn't really do anything. Gibson, what's this?
That's his guitar. There's a lot of photos of him playing on a 6-string. So it must be drop tuned to the fuck.
Yeah, well, you could put some thick ass strings on it, or he might just have on. Like he could have recorded. Who knows what he recorded it with?
Oh no, he's got a 7 blaster there.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah. That's probably it.
Thanks, Julian.
So probably drop B. Bro. Yeah, we'll have a look at it. I don't know, but that's anyway, right. Yes. Point is, it's straightforward. I don't really crave anything more. I think because they're going to elaborate on what I said earlier. It's a piece of art, and it's not. They don't have to make things complex.
That's a fucking really good way to put it.
Yeah. They don't have to make things sound complex, or they don't have to play fast. They don't have to play. Play with much finesse or anything like that. It's just about the art. It's about the sound itself.
So this album, I have seen it cop a bit of flack for being like quote unquote overproduced. You know, they say it's got such a really big production sound,
and there is a lot of effects on his voice. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, for sure, it's reverbed up.
Reverbed up. Some of them, I think he uses auto tune to give it a certain sound on some of them.
Yeah.
But you're doing a lot there. A lot going on. So.
That's fine though.
I've seen a fair bit of them live. I would see them live in fucking April if they weren't charging $200+ a ticket.
Oh my god!
Because I don't want to see Bring Me that much. Like they're supposed.
Oh, they're touring with Bring Me.
Yeah.
$200.
Mm. Anyway, but I've seen a fair bit of him live. He's pretty fucking solid live. I think there's definitely effects on his vocals, but I think he's got the moxie without the effects.
Exactly. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's why I said earlier that he sounds like the MGMT singer who has effects on his voice but also is incredibly clean, crisp.
Yeah. I dig
that. Post Malone, interestingly.
Yeah, I'll go there. I'll cop that one. Yeah.
I don't mind Posty. I get around him. I've seen some stuff of his live later in his career, sort of now-ish. And he still uses that auto-tune, but it's like, dude, you sound better without it. Yeah, that was his early in his career he'd use it. So, but nowadays, like he did that Nirvana. He did like a full set list of Nirvana covers with Travis Barker during the lockdown.
Oh, boy.
Didn't play Smells Like Teen Spirit, I'm 90% sure. Because he's like, yep, Kurt Cobain would not want that. Anyway, that was really cool. But so I digress. But yeah, it's like those vocalists that, yes, they use the effects, but they're not a crutch for them.
Yeah, but he doesn't always sing high either. He's not always in his falsetto. He can hit his falsetto. He can do his screams. But I like his voice. It's kind of in the mid-range for this song. Well, he does it in the chorus a bit.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he's far away from the mic and it creates the big space. Yeah. You know what I mean? Through the chorus, it's really good. Love that. But then I just want to talk about what happens towards the end of this song, mate. It doesn't seem like something you do, you know, with your fucking, I got ADHD and the song needs to go fast all the time. There's like a minute break there where it's just not much. Yeah. It's just soundscape. Like
soundscape's a good way to put it.
How do you get yourself through that?
I know you're not into them. Is it you that's not into them? I don't mind a good sort of instrumental break.
Maybe it is me. Maybe I was just projecting. Yeah, sorry, bro.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. Depends. Like, you know, we talked about it on the And Still I Want a South episode. There's like that 40 seconds of like really dark ambience at the end, and a lot of other bands have done that. Do you know what I mean? Some do it all right, some do it not that good. I don't know. It's all subjective, really.
Yeah, because I think I was cruising around at work, whatever I was doing. I'm like, is this song on? Are they still playing?
Am I in an elevator?
Yeah, because it's like 6 minutes. It's very long for the bangers list. Yeah. So
yes,
forgive I distinctly us for that. Remember the first time I heard it and. I was thinking I was listening to another song because I kind of zoned out because, had that ambience and it felt like it was just fading out and I'm like, oh, okay. And then I was on a long drive to the coast and you know, just kind of
By yourself?
Drifting off. No, I was with Elise. Elise was...
Shout out
Elise.
How do you categorise that last section? It's not funk. It's not soul. Pop. It's not pop. It is. I don't know.
It's a bit of everything.
Yeah, pop is very broad. I'm just like, go under this umbrella, but it's probably not quite.
I think pop. It's kind of funk. I'd say it's more funk than anything. Look,
I mean, we know fuck all about funk here at the bass.
Yeah.
Fuck you, breakdown. That's it.
Yeah, the bass lines in it quite funky. Yeah.
So. It moves. It's good shit.
But because it is slowed down quite dramatically, normally funk, there'll be a bit more energy, a bit of a... played a bit of a high tempo.
Yeah.
One would expect anyway, but I don't know. It's different. That's the only way I can describe it. I can't really put a particular genre on that particular part, but I remember Elise actually said to me, she's like, it kind of sounds emo now. I'm like, does it? Is that what you call emo? But emo. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So that's really good to get someone else's perspective. We should get her in for an episode. What do you think about this metal song? I hate it.
It'd just be me and you bullying her the whole time. What are you talking about?
Not all their songs are like this. You know, Alkaline is just pretty much full on the whole time. Pretty short song, 3 minutes. They're all like 6 minute songs with like breaks. But there's like an 8 minute song at the start of this album. Does it take me back to Eden?
Ascensionism is 8 minutes. It's actually the third longest song on the record, I think. It's that.
Yeah, take me back to Eden.
Ascensionism, then take me back to Eden.
Yeah,
which is an interesting one. I wanted to touch on that. Yeah, because,
I'm glad I brought it up.
Yeah,
go me, pro host.
So I, like, the first time I heard that song, it's literally, it feels like four mini songs sort of stitched together. It's like the start and the end are quite similar because it's the similar, like, same vocals and stuff and same sort of musical pattern. But then there's like these two sections in the middle. So he goes to this, like, I think because he does it on the Apparition as well. It's this sort of, I think it's called trap, like that trap style, that hip hop. Like
I think it's
got that sort of like, I don't know. I'd have to ask someone that. I'm pretty sure it's that trap style, and he does that on the Apparition, but he also does that on the second part of Take Me Back to Eden, where he's essentially rapping. Like he's singing. I spit blood when I wake up.
I've got that melody in my head. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. Fast singing, slow rapping, what do you want to call it? But he's still got that melodic sound to him. I remember that style of vocals I was telling you about before, where he's sort of like clenching his jaw a bit. That's what I'm talking about there.
Okay. Do you mean like he's spitting the words almost? Not like spitting bars, but like the words are coming out. The words are like deliberately like forceful, like each one's going to be like a punch. Yeah, but back to Eden, it makes sense because isn't he like, he's got the shits with his fucking relationship with Sleep or he's trying to break up with the relationship. He's like, so he's angry at them, they, her?
It's more, I think I've always sort of interpreted that song as someone who you could say, like, a good way to say it is like someone that has seen all the lovely but all the horrible things the world has to offer and wants to go back to a place. Like, Eden is a concept. Yeah, it's Eden. It's conceptually paradise.
Yeah.
They've said, I don't want to do this anymore. I want out. I just want to go back to, you know, this place of tranquility, I suppose.
Mm.
So
yeah, it's good shit. I really like the subject matter of all of it. It's interesting. It's good to have like maybe a muse or have like an idea where you're coming from for all your content and really be able to build off it and create your own almost universe. You've got the lore. You can always pick a perspective to come through to create new music and stuff. It's just, yeah, really good. Rather than just being like, you know, like a lot of the stuff we talk about is often just the shit with relationships, just angry relationships and people. So it's, yeah.
And that's like I said earlier, you know, like the anonymity or whatever it is, how you want to put it, that I think is a boon to
for that creative process.
For that creative process, yeah, because you can be like the toughest person on the outside, but be the most vulnerable person when it comes to writing lyrics.
Yeah, true. Try to separate yourself from that so people don't
like. It's definitely not a song that I'm that into. But Are You Really Okay?
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah,
but I love it. I mean,
that's such a like highly emotional song.
Yeah,
not necessarily like in a bad way, but you know, he's talking to this person that he obviously cares immensely about, that, you know, has like tried to hurt themselves or isn't doing well. And it's that, those things that you sort of wish you could say to people.
Yeah, if absolutely. You didn't
have your own ego to deal with.
Absolutely. You know, and that little motif they've got throughout that, on that little guitar riff, the it's just, it's simple but beautiful. And it's another example of something that they don't have to overdo anything.
I've been meaning to ask you this for ages. There's this first song, Chokehold, that opens the record. Yeah. I think that's a really fucking solid song. That, you know,
it's catchy.
Yeah, right. So that first stanza, I think you call it section, when we were made, there was no accident, that part, the first, that those two lines and the next two lines, he actually repeats those on the final sort of build up of Take Me Back to Eden.
Oh,
you hear them in the background.
Nice bit of that.
Yeah, well,
it was my accident. We were tangled up like branches in the flood. And then he says it was no accident in like that real sort of like that last bit of before the heavy part of Take Me Back to Eden. It's like that final like build up for like an epic boss battle sort of thing. Or
good
build
like, up. You know, like good pick up.
Like a crescendo of something. Yeah.
Good pick up there, man. So
there's a term for repeating lyrics later on somewhere in an album.
It's not a medley because that's when you bring everything together in its own song. I don't know what it's called. It's not called a response.
We'll do our homework somewhere on that one. Yeah, there is a term for that.
A little bit of homework.
And he does that. Yeah.
So that's sick. I was going to say something super important, but I forgot. Oh, yeah, actually, speaking of Mysterious Band and anonymity, I think, was it on this album or the one before it where they like released like, let's say art, not the cover art, but art within the album, and it was like three like fish, scary looking fish kind of designs, right, with like blue backgrounds. And in the blue backgrounds, in the corners, was like some numbers, really hard to see. Did you see that?
No, I don't think I saw that, but no. There's other things that I wanted to touch on.
Fuck yeah, I'm leading us into that.
Yeah.
And Daniel, this probably won't be as interesting to you because this is probably more Julian's alley. And so in the picture, it's got the numbers and very hard to see, but if you put the pictures next to each other, you can see the numbers kind of make coordinates. And you know, people,
is this for the releases? This is the single? They released artwork with each of the three singles they released before the album?
Or that might have been where the pictures were from.
Because I thought you meant this was on This Will Play, This Place Will Be Your Tomb.
I can't remember what it was from.
I should have watched the video game. There's a whole like fucking community dedicated to this, right?
And
this
whole community?
This dude on YouTube actually like has a couple of videos that details the whole process. So they had the cover
process
art.
Process of what?
Well, I'll get to that. The cover art, the single release art for, I think it was Chokehold, The Summoning, and maybe Granite. They released, you know, because they always put out two to three songs before the record. And like you were saying, it had little figures and icons and sort of what, like, you know, little dots and stuff in the corners of all of them.
Yeah.
And from that, the community was able to figure out when the release date would be before it was announced.
Oh, that's sick.
Like, yeah, they hid some... I'm going to have to go and find the fucking video again. But they hid a quite a large amount of detail in those little pieces of artwork and a few other things as well.
Messages for the community.
Yeah. And people full on, like... It was like weaponized autism on Reddit. Do you know what I mean? Like, they fully came together and figured out. And it was to do with, like, the fucking lunar cycle of that particular year. And they figured out there was a particular day based on certain things around the artwork. So, like, whoever's doing the promotional stuff, even if it's the guy himself or the band themselves, like, that's fucking unreal.
Just channeling.
Just the amount of effort they put into it, yeah.
It's fucking sick.
Yeah.
On the pictures, like, maybe they're blue, so it's to do with the ocean, which makes sense in the end now. And the coordinates are, like, coordinates for somewhere on the planet, like latitude and longitude.
Yeah.
And ends up being at Point Nemo. Which is like the most remote place on the planet. Yeah, it's in the middle of the ocean. Right, So people found that, and so it's interesting that
that would have been This Place Will Become Your Term.
I have a feeling I might have left my fucking windows open, boys. It's not raining too hard, is it?
No, it's,
nah, it's all good.
No, we'll be right.
Yeah, yeah, that would be, because the cover art of This Will Become Your Tomb is like the ocean and stuff. So we're talking about different things, but the same thing, yeah.
So that's, I just feel like giving that to your community is incredible. Like, it's almost an activity to do while you wait. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's, but like, it's not immediately obvious as well.
You've it took a bit of time for them to find the Point Nemo, because I believe that it took a while to release each picture. People are like, oh, there's numbers here. Then the next one come, oh, there's more numbers in the next one. And then, well, here we are.
Yeah.
So no, I love that shit. Yeah. That's great. It's good. Avenged have done shit like that as well. But yeah. I won't go into
it. Shout out Avenged.
But one example was before the release of Hail to the King. Because Avenged have always had regularly had a partnership with Call of Duty, with the Black Ops franchise, and they.
I didn't think I could like a band less.
Oh,
You just
don't discard, man.
Come on, man! It's like fucking sports games. You do something and then you swap sides and do it again. I didn't come up with that. Joel said that first.
It's just simple. It's just simple and beautiful. You just You shoot motherfuckers, and then shot, and then you go again. but anyway, they actually had like a in the background of like one of the I think it was like a post credit scene on the game at the very end of the game a post credit scene, and there's like this number on the wall, and that number like 2 months later ended up being like a secret code to unlock access to get onto their website for the launch. Like, shit like that. Yeah, just an example. Like, it's great. Cool. It's a good interactive way to get fans involved and talking to each other and create hype.
As much as simultaneously. Like shit on A7X, like we talked about, they do engage in a lot of fan service. So, like,
And same here with Sleep Token. Like, what they've done, I think, I dig that. That's cool. I had no idea they did that, but that's awesome.
Then they covered Hey Ya.
Yes.
They did.
What the fuck? That popped up on Spotify yesterday. I was like, let's put Sleep Token on shuffle, and then what the fuck? Hey Ya.
Cool. Well, if you actually read the lyrics to that song, it's a fucking dark, depressing song.
Yeah,
it is.
It's fucking awful.
It's like that Pumped Up Kick song level of depressing.
Yeah, which is just like, hey, I'm going to go shoot a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's very interesting.
So if you just put like a punchy sort of 4/4 beat behind it, then you can mass...
That's
like,
right.
Yeah.
You can make anything a pop song, and catch it.
You see that guy on YouTube that like reimagines songs, like sad songs as happy songs? Like, it'd be the most depressing. It's so funny. Like, it's impressive, but it's cool.
I've made this joke before, but they do it with nursery rhymes. They did "If You're Happy and You Know It, Clap Your Hands" for Grown Ups. It was that Pharrell Williams song.
It was, yes. You said that before, and that's
literally that's, you can make anything shit sound less shit. Fuck, I hate pop music. Anyway.
And isn't that Gaudier song, somebody I used to know, is that like Baba Black Sheep or ABC? Is the melody for that?
Baba Black Sheep, ABC. Well, they're all the fucking same melody. So it's Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Maybe Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. I don't know. I'm probably talking shit.
Everyone's just digressed to their childhood. Really, we're all sitting here staring into the distance like...
Doesn't make sense.
Wow, is he right there? Holy shit.
It's just a podcast and we're just reminiscing, boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit of that. Shit, any other songs you guys like by Sleep Token? I know we've kind of mentioned...
Are You Really Okay is up there for me.
You love that one?
Pretty damn good. Take Me Back to Eden. It's just a masterpiece, really. I have an
ongoing disagreement with my mate Steve about this.
Shout out, Steve.
He reckons that Euclid is the best way to end the record, and it was the correct song. I am adamant that, like, how hard Take Me Back to Eden hits, like the build-up, the crescendo, the fucking huge metalcore outro. I'm like, that should have been where they finished it. Plus, it's the title track.
Yeah.
And him and his wife, who great people, they were both just like, nah, Euclid's better. So it's this sort of like ongoing thing I have.
I'm by your side there, mate. Yeah. 100% agree. In fact, when I listened to the record for the second time, or third time.
Who's counting?
It was, early on. And I listened to Take Me Back to Eden. I was like, oh, cool. I remember this song being great. And I remembered it as the closing song. And then all of a sudden, this other song came on. I'm like, oh, is this a new release bonus track or something like that? And I was like, no.
Yeah, like the Japanese Japanese release. You know, that was a thing?
Yeah.
Bands like would put out an album. That'd be like a Japanese bonus edition where there'd be like three songs on the back end that were like B-sides. And we never got those in like Western countries.
No, we're not good enough.
For some reason, the Japanese were just the privileged ones. They get everything.
Did not know that. Yeah. Wow. Cool.
I mean, they're pretty nice people, so. You were saying, sorry.
But I 100% agree with you. Like, that's how I remember it, and that's kind of how I wished it would end. I It just like makes it makes sense to me.
Euclid's not a bad song at all.
No, but I just, middle of the album, or second to last, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's just not a conversation I've ever had with someone like, hey, check this album out. What do you think should have been the last song? Weird.
But we talked about this in the...
It was the
Thornhill episode.
It was about the...
Remember I said, what did I say? It was some nonsense like, are the last songs on records good because they're the last song or because they're a good song to be the last song? Sonder by Polaris being the primary example. Yeah, very, very, right. Very intense, emotional song and finishes with a real punch like out. That.
Yeah.
Fucking
nice. Yeah. I like this song, Alkaline, like I said earlier. I think it's probably my favorite by them. And if I was going to tell someone to like check out Sleep Token, I'd say start with Alkaline. Is that... Obviously, you guys can differ.
I like Alkaline. I was going to say songs from the album we're talking about. I would say Chokehold.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Is that one of your favorites?
Yeah, that'd be one of my favorites. I actually like it more than I like The Summoning.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know what it is. And then I'd say Granite is solid. There's a bunch of them, but we'll just say those two. But like to your point, I think, Alkaline, really, really good example of them, but not a true example because it doesn't show off their softer side.
Exactly. It's like a highlight snippet and you can go deeper if you want.
But then when he's playing like a really tight sort of
tight
whippy beat on the hi-hats when he comes in and then he swaps to the fucking China and they go into those chugs and that breakdown like da da da.
Oh, he fucking works that China to the ground.
Fucking that. There's a video of him playing that, doing like a studio playthrough of that and... What's the track? Track one's Atlantic. Track two is... I've completely forgotten it now. I listen to it all the time. Anyway, yeah.
Let him stew.
Yeah, he did. He did two like drum playthroughs.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so, yeah.
Love that. And it's kind of hard now to say bands that are similar to them. It's
Hypnosis. It's just, fuck me. The song's called Hypnosis. Sorry.
Yeah, it's... I can't really suggest bands that are similar to these guys if you happen to already love Sleep Token, which is part of the job here at the Bangers List, is knowing other bands that are similar.
But that's kudos to Sleep Token for being so unique.
Yeah.
And that's Sleep Token.
Yeah.
Well, I would contend, mostly because I saw it online. So it must be true. There are probably other bands out there that sound like these guys or that people are going to say that fucking Sleep Token ripped off. You cannot get away from that. There'll be other bands have similar elements, but mix similar genres. They just haven't either gotten the recognition or they haven't done it like these guys have done it or they don't do it the same. So,
just to tie it all up, like I said before, how did they get popular and like why? And is it because they sound similar to someone or not? I can't grasp why I think this year or last year they started to explode so much so, like as I said, they were in my shuffles and stuff. And... do you know the answer? Go.
I think I know the answer.
Because I was just going to say, I thought it was just... Yeah, go ahead.
I think I know. It just came back to me. So about, I think it was earlier this year, maybe late last year, this video went viral. And it was of Sleep Token playing live, some fan footage. And it was a pretty intimate performance. Yeah. So it was, maybe, I don't know, 500,000 people, something like that. I don't know.
Which song was it that he was playing?
I can't recall. I didn't actually know them at the time. So I knew them based on a meme, basically, to start with.
I think it's The Summoning.
It might have been The Summoning.
Do you want to look at that?
I think it was earlier this year, so probably.
I'll fill the air for you briefly. I know they released a few songs back to back to back, right?
They did Chokehold and then
The first three off this album, right? And I think then was when their popularity kind of skyrocketed and they became mainstream. But I still don't know why. And this was just really good timing.
Yeah.
But still, it's just all very...
Yeah.
It's Atlantic.
Is that the song?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so the
Atlantic. And then it goes... And it gets a really quiet part, a really intimate and mysterious part, if you will. And someone just lets one rip. And it's fucking loud.
Just rips
like
ass,
everyone can hear it. And then everyone just starts pissing themselves laughing. Like,
yeah.
And it's a band that's so, that you kind of you go to watch Sleep Token or a band such as Sleep Token, it's the atmosphere, and you take it seriously. You're there for the experience, and someone just fucking lets one rip.
Do you know what's really fucking weird? Seeing these guys play a festival slot during the daytime.
Oh yeah,
they are not a band that should play during the day. Like they're great.
Did you see them play during the day?
There's footage, on YouTube of them playing like a European festival during the day.
Yeah.
And like obviously they're not as big as some bands, so they might just have to play a daytime show here and there, but they don't rely on lights and theatrics and stuff, but their show is greatly fucking enhanced by it because they have the three backup singers, the choir singers.
Yeah, the girls, they're not anonymous, are they?
No, I don't know who they are. I don't think they've released their names, but they have, the drummer and the choir vocalists, or the choir style vocalists, then the bass guitar and singer. And then they have, the lights and the smoke, and they have the people with torches and stuff like that. So they don't look bad during the day. They just, you're better off seeing them at night.
Takes away from the experience.
It does. Yeah.
At least indoors.
Yeah. There's a funny thing just on that thing about someone fighting. I've seen a couple of videos of Vessel, because he plays, there's a few songs from Sundowning they still play live, and most of them are just piano, just him and piano. So a keyboard on stage. And a couple of times I've seen it, people are recording him, he'll start playing the first few notes to, what's that shit Evanescence song that made them popular? Bring me to life.
Wake me up. Wake me
up. What are your best
I'm looking at the poster on them as well behind you. I couldn't remember what it was called. I just knew it was on the Daredevil soundtrack. He plays the first few notes of that song and then stops and laughs.
Yeah.
So that's the most, he's closest he comes to having an interaction with the crowd.
Yeah.
He'll funny. Just do a and then start playing the song properly. So just little things like that.
That's good. Yeah. That's good on this rugby league. Love that.
But what you were saying before, I think that video went viral.
Oh, it went viral. It got my attention, put it that way. And that's I'd heard of them, but that's when I was like, oh, Sleep Token, okay. Yeah. And then they just haven't left my brain since then. Yeah. So
I'd say we're fans. Yeah. But
I definitely am. Yeah.
I think I was kind of put off them by their strange meteoric rise. I was just what are we doing? Are we buying fucking views here? How's
this? Then you realise they've been around for 3 records.
Yeah, for ages, and they're great. Yeah. So, anything else you just want to get off your chest before we jump into the most important part?
I think we sort of talk about everything, really.
Yeah, we're a bit off our game from that long holiday. It takes a little bit to get back into your straps, you know.
Yeah,
a bit unfit for podcasting at the moment. We'll get there in time.
Something meaty like this that all three of us know, that's always...
Yeah, I love that.
And then a 25-minute recount of a 4-band show start.
Yeah, it's a podcast of 2 parts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Julian's story followed by a Sleep Token podcast. for bangs for this song, bang, bang, bang. Lots going on. There's a lot going on in this song. You know, as we talked about, all the genre changes, stylistic changes. And it is good. I do enjoy it. Part where it slows down for a minute is a little bit, So I'm going to give it a 7. A 7. 7 bangs out of 10. Is that all right?
I mean, it's your
band. It's a very opinionated podcast. Yeah, doesn't matter.
By definition, yes, 7 is all right. In fact, probably a bit better than all right. So, yes.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
What about
solid.
What about you?
I feel pretty similarly. I don't mind the change up at the end. I think that's cool. It was strange at first, caught me off guard, but I think it was probably probably part of the reason behind it. They didn't want something that was straightforward. It was
almost the reason I didn't give these guys a serious go, because I only listened to that one song.
Mm.
You know, when you get that one and that's your hook.
Yeah.
I almost fucking went, nah, I can't be bothered with this, because I didn't like that one bit. And there was just, it's something just... In your back of your mind, no, keep going. Yeah. You'll be all right. It's fucking, sack up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something stops you from pushing next.
Correct.
Yeah. Exactly right. Look, overall, 7.5 for me.
7.5.
Yeah.
Generous.
Yeah. It's solid. It's good. It's interesting. It's actually very interesting. Actually,
there's a fair bit of fucking bullying from my mate Steve as well.
Shout out, Steve.
He's like, have you listened to this yet? I'm like, no. He's like,
you must
listen to it. I'll fucking kill you. No, he didn't say that.
Fair enough. And then you said
7.5, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably say something similar. I think if I didn't know the rest of their body of work, I'd give it a 7, 6.5 maybe. But knowing the album that it comes from and the theme of the whole thing and the blah, 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 I'd probably say, 7.5, 8. I'll go 8.
8, cool. 7.5 average. Yeah. Nice.
And I do love the outro of the song.
Yeah.
It's just weird. It's not something that the three of us listen to very often. So sometimes you're just not in the fucking mood. You're like, nah, skip. As soon as that last band part skips before that sort of before that interlude, I guess, you're like, nah, I'm done. Keep going.
Yeah, it's a good experience, man. That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah.
Well done. So, averages out to about 7.5 there. Shout out to Sleep Token. Shout out to Vessel. Keep it up. Love the work.
It'll be interesting to see what they do next, because I think...
Yeah.
This place will be your tomb or become your tomb. I'm going to fucking look that up before I finish this episode, just so I never get that wrong again. But that was a pretty good album. This is a more solid album in my head. It'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
Yep.
Because they aren't bound by you know, like everything we talked about with having like, you know, a presence and a personality, like what they choose to do next, who knows?
Who knows?
This place will become your tomb.
Yep. That's the album.
That's a long fucking album title.
Yeah, and if we stay in here any longer, this fucking office studio will become our tomb, boys. It's hot, eh? Hot for an 18-degree day. Jesus Christ.
Make one fucking hat and head off then. We'll be back in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks for listening.
Covering Nickelback.
Covering Nickelback. Woo!
Hell yeah.
Not really.
Peace.